Welcome to the Know How Podcast, the only podcast to give you access to top tips, recruiting stories, and insider info here at Impellum. So sit back and turn the volume up. In this captivating podcast episode, Andy Lim's expertise and wisdom shines through. His insights on client relationships, champions, top tips, recruiting myths, manager's cadence, withdrawals and deposits, and personal development were a treasure trove of knowledge for anyone looking to excel in the field of sales and recruitment. Listeners can be left inspired, equipped with practical strategies, and ready to unleash their own success.
If you could just give us, I suppose, a bit of a summary of your background and how you've ended up here with us at Lorien.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you the SparkNotes version. So grew up in San Francisco my whole life, started my recruitment journey right after college when a recruiter on LinkedIn messaged me and said, hey, interested in a recruiting or sales job? And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. Interviewed with Chris, which was the first time that he moved to the States, which is really exciting. But since then, grew a market with him from scratch, became the number one biller at our previous company, number eight globally, and did so by building really specialist mobile markets teams. And afterwards, I followed two incredible leaders, Chris and Danny, into this company to do the same and become the best at what we do.
Brilliant. Yeah, that was a great summary. Thank you. And I think one of the things that you're becoming quite famous for across Impellum is the way that you're able to build client relationships. So yeah. I wanted to ask you what your, there may be more than three, but perhaps your top three tips for successful client relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say my first is to be a consultant and not an order taker. So I think as you build confidence in your career, you feel more comfortable talking to clients and giving them some consultative things about ways to do their interview processes, ways to move forward with candidates, kind of your feedback on specific things in the market. So I think at the beginning, a lot of times when people are working on a client relationship, they say yes to almost everything that's coming in. And then the fact when you can push back a little bit and be more consultative, I feel those individuals both respect it more and it kind of builds your relationship. So I would say that's number one. Number two, I would say have a defined interview process and a cadence with your manager. So a lot of managers, if it's anything like four or five stages, I always try to get it down to one or two. And I show them the value add, what other competitors are doing in this market, the reason we need to get it shorter so we can get folks in part of the process and kind of relating it back to the things that they need. So always making sure to get a really good interview process down for the recruiting team and then making sure that you have a cadence built in with your manager. So either meeting on a weekly cadence so you don't have any bottlenecks throughout the process or making sure that we always have feedback calls after interviews so we can move the process going. So I think that cadence has always helped me a lot. And then once that cadence is good enough, and you start dwindling down on the positions you have with them, just asking for referrals within the organization and continue kind of expanding your network. So I would say that's number two. And then the third one is having multiple champions and just referrals in the organizations. I feel when you have somebody that's really high up, if they leave to another place, it's a good thing because usually they'll bring you with you because you have a great relationship. Yeah. But the only thing is, if that's the person that you're the most connected to in the organization and you kind of lose that person in there, you don't have a huge champion that's vouching for you at your big clients. So I would say always multi-thread, have multiple champions in the organization, kind of get sticky with as many people as you can. So that way, if folks leave to other places, they'll both bring you across, but then you'll also have multiple champions in the organization to continue growing your network there.
I love that. So you use the word champions. I don't know what people call it across different parts of Impellum. I used to say sponsors. I've heard some people say advocates, but essentially those people that are going to, you know, go out there and do not all of your business development for you, of course, but some of that work by referring you and speaking to the great service you've provided them. Yeah. And I really loved what you said about the interview process as well, because I think a lot of times people think we try to do that just for our own benefit. Of course, everybody in sales loves working with some urgency, but you were talking to how it benefits them, you know, your client, which if you continue to do that, then you're going to get a more effective, a better end result. So excellent. And the market, you know, as you and I both know, is quite cyclical. It's quite up and down at times. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. would your tips or your advice change depending on the market, or would you say those tips are kind of recession proof?
I would say those tips are recession proof. It's always, we get in through like our Trojan horse, which is our mobile market, but we land and expand within accounts, and we build successful client relationships, I would say, by following those kind of three successful things. So it's not only in the mobile market where you find success with that, but I feel if you kind of bring those disciplines and things that you're looking for to each of your client relationships, it'll always make them a bit better.
Yeah, that's great, because I know, you know, for some people listening to this, they may not have as much experience as you do. And this may be the first time they've seen a dip in the market. So there can be an mm-hmm. element of concern, maybe panic.
Yeah.
But it's good to know that from your experience, if you continue to do certain things and keep mm-hmm. the confidence there, then, you know, you'll still get results. And thinking back to early in your career, what's some of the best advice that you received and something that you still think about today?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say this one would go to Chris McKinney. One of the things that he taught me early on in my career is the questions that make you squirm make you earn. And the big reason for that is when I first started, my first three deals that I got dropped for a variety of different reasons. And there's no worse feeling in the world when you're first starting out and your deals are dropping, you're not exactly sure why. So when Chris taught me that quote, the questions that make you squirm make you earn, it's about asking those hard questions when you're either leaving a candidate call or a client call, and you leave and you have a feeling in your stomach like, oh man, I don't know if they're going to accept this role, or, oh, I don't know if the client is actually going to move forward with these candidates, any of those different things, you need to go back and ask that question on the call. Or if you ever had that feeling, you need to make sure to kind of address it. So I feel once I was able to start doing that, a lot of my deals started closing properly, because I could one, two-step close, and then two, I can speak about some of those things and kind of bring it to light, right? You rather find problems early on than be surprised by them later. So I think that was a big thing that Chris taught me that stuck with me for a long time.
It's funny that you brought that one up, because I would say the same for me, actually. It didn't come from Chris, but it came from a very successful recruiter that I worked with way back when in the UK. Mm-hmm. And it's something that really resonated with me, because I was very guilty when I was on the front line, so to speak, mm-hmm. of, I'm naturally optimistic, so I just kind of hoped everything was going to work out.
Yeah,
the candidate would accept, they'd love the job, etc. But I came to realize through those things happening at the end of a process that it's better, exactly as you said, you know, it's better to know mm-hmm. what the problems are, what the potential risks are early on. So that's a good one.
It makes you a bit more cynical. And then also, like, if you can, like, for example, a candidate's interviewing at multiple places, and for example, our client is Kroger, you want to just stack where their other interviews are and how it compares to Kroger. And if something else is number one, that's completely okay. But why is that company number one, right? It might be because they're offering $3 extra on the hour, or because the position is remote, or because, you know, there could be a variety of reasons. And then we can take that information back to the client and be like, hey, this person would accept if we got $5 more on the hour and we moved it into a remote position. And if the client loves them, they typically would move forward, but we wouldn't be able to know that unless we kind of address those problems early on.
Yeah. Exactly. And what is a common myth about sales in the staffing industry that you're aware of that you would want to dispel?
I would say that it's hard or impossible to try to break into huge companies. I think a lot of the times, maybe for the sales folks, you try to get into some of the smaller ones because less red tape and you have a bigger opportunity. But I feel it's always important to get like small companies you're going after, mid-tier companies that you're going after, and then the behemoths that you're kind of chipping away with. Because in sales, I mean, there's no cookie cutter way of breaking into an account. There can be lots of different ways that we all teach. You can do references, referrals into somewhere. You can do it by forward marketing, but you can also do it by meeting a family event somewhere and knowing that somebody worked in IT and getting into a company. You can give people LinkedIn advice. I feel like there's so many different ways that people across this team and organization have broken into companies. But I would say for sales folks, don't shy away from going after the big ones, right? It may take you a longer period or a cycle to get in there, but once you do, you'll be set, right? Think of Mike Gilday and Amazon. Think of Justin Winger at Microsoft. Like, they have these huge companies. It took them a lot of time to break in, but once they did, you start getting expanding in that account and you do really well.
Yeah, that's great advice. So I think, you know, some people, you know, if they've worked at other recruitment firms, maybe they've had different direction in terms of, yeah, just stick with the SMEs because it's easier, you know, there's less barriers to entry. But I think your point about having a sort of mix within your portfolio and not shying away from the big beasts. And, you know, your results as a team really show that, don't they? I mean, you don't exactly have a list of small, unheard of companies. I think most people know Kroger, eBay, Walmart, etc. Okay, excellent. And one of the reasons I've loved working with you over the last kind of 18 months is that you really seem to focus on your own personal development journey as well as the development of your team. So how do you go about doing that? What are some of the things that you do to keep developing?
So I would say one, I love listening to sales podcasts and just reading sales books in general. But the one I've been listening to quite a lot is called 30 Minutes to President's Club. And they give really, really great advice from top AEs across the organization on cold calling, getting into companies, cadences, all of that stuff. But I always find that really exciting. So one of the ones I listened to recently and somebody that talked about it, his name is Josh Braun on LinkedIn. It was somebody that Grant referred me over to. But he talked about withdrawals and deposits. And I mentioned this in our last sales meeting that we had, but the story goes like, hey, when you move into a new neighborhood, you meet a neighbor and they come, they knock on your door like, hey, would you mind just grabbing my mail for me? I have to leave for work early today. And you're like, yeah, no problem. I can grab that for you. The next week they come over. Hey, would you mind just grabbing the trash bins for me? I have something that I got to go to. You're like, yeah, absolutely. Then the next time they knock, they're like, hey, can you grab something in my pool? I have this going on, right? At some point, you're going to stop answering that neighbor because they're asking for too many things. You're like, okay, well, I don't want to answer the door anymore. I know this neighbor is going to ask for something. And that's the same way I would say for salespeople in roles when we're going after managers, we're taking too many withdrawals, right? You're asking for too many things. Hey, can you sign this MSA? Hey, can you get these interview times booked in? Hey, can we meet for this time? Like we're asking for too many things and we're taking too many withdrawals. So the good way to kind of do it, and I've been speaking about this a lot with my sales team, is start making some deposits. So deposits could come in a variety of different ways. So one recently, eBay is a big client that I work with. They're slow on hiring right now because they have an embargo to work with agencies. But one of the managers I'm really close with, they just fixed their view item page and it took a 2-year journey to create that and make sure that it was done. So I sent her a really long note. I read through the article. I told her the things that I loved about it. I loved the way that these things turned out for these reasons and the accomplishments that she got. And I was like, there was nothing I asked for in that. I just sent a deposit. I'm like, hey, that was phenomenal. Just wanted to credit her on all of the work. She loved it, sent me a really good thank you note. She's like, hey, I appreciate you reading through all of that. Thank you so much. So that was a deposit there. You can also, I sent like a manager that I was working with over at Walmart. He's starting to look for new positions. So with companies I'm not working with, Chewy as an example, Target, I sent his profile over to them. I CC'd the manager that used to work together at Walmart. I'm like, hey, introducing you to this manager. I know he worked with you before in the past. Just wanted you guys to get reconnected. Right. Another deposit. Nothing that I asked for specifically there. Of course, it'd be good for a long-term relationship, but that was another deposit. But if you just think of any type of deposits that you can make, it can be like giving market insights about a company, or if a team had their best quarter of the year, sending a good, you know, congratulations note. There's like a million different things. But I would say as you're asking for many things, think about the deposits that you can make into your account and your managers to continue kind of that relationship is a big one that I really enjoyed recently.
Yeah, it's very logical. And it's something that we speak to a lot of our new hires about, because especially if they're new to sales, they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just calling people up and bothering them all the time. And
yeah,
I explain as much as possible that, you know, the value of your network is huge. So I love that example of making a deposit through bringing your connections together, because you are in a very specialist kind of community. And there's all sorts of different ways. If you're thinking like this, you're always looking for an opportunity to connect the dots and help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what I love about recruiting.
You're making the deposit, but of course, there might be a return there later on. If you're like, hey, I'm introducing you two directors that work at Target, or you two directors that work at Chewy, one day, once they get into that role, they're going to be like, who got me into this position? They didn't get paid for it, but now I want to bring on Andy into this company, right? So these deposits can also be very thoughtful, right? Me and Danny met with some folks when we were out in Dallas, and it was his first time laying off folks on his team, and he was doing it next week. Danny just gave him some great advice, like, hey, I know this is going to be a hard time. Here's some pieces of advice that we can give you. And then I'm like, hey, if send me those four people afterwards, I can see if I can connect them to my network. And then I connected them with a manager at HEB. I don't have a relationship with yet, but I know they usually poach a lot from there. Made the connection. They were all connected already and knew each other. That was another deposit. Didn't ask for anything specifically in return then, but every person now that's going to go over there will know me. And when they have a need, we'll start working together. So
becoming the verb in the market. Brilliant. Yeah, I like this. It's easy to understand. And I think it's something that, you know, people can apply quite quickly if they're not already doing it, you know, to their conversations and meetings.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I've also heard about the like 100 hour kind of journey. So if you spend 100 hours in a year working on something, that's about 17 or 18 minutes a day. You will become better at it than 95% of the population. So my theory is, if I continue to listen to a podcast a day, read a sales book for 10, 15 minutes a day, work on my sales skills, I will become better than 95% of the population. So I always want to work in becoming the best at that type of stuff. And I've used that as motivation to continue improving. So that's also a thing that I really enjoy.
Yeah. And I've been listening to the 30 Minutes to President's Club since you recommended it. And I really like it. And I usually don't enjoy those kind of things. But
yeah,
it's just, you know, it's people who are on the front lines, people who are selling, speaking from real experience and what's worked or maybe what hasn't worked for them. So, yeah, it's a good one.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, speaking of, you know, the learns that I suppose you get from your experience, what are some of your key learns, you know, through wins or through just learning? I know Danny likes to say win or learn. It's not win or fail. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. I think that's a great one. I would say I learned the most from the times where I like when I dropped those deals. So the biggest things after that come from the questions that make you squirm, make you earn is how to close properly. And I feel once I learned how to close properly, it drastically changed the career for myself because now I didn't have drop deals anymore. I knew how to ask the proper questions to make sure things move across. So I would say learn how to two-step close and it will change your career. If you don't know how to do that, please tap into some folks on our team. Chris is phenomenal at it. Danny did a training before when he was on site in Fort Lauderdale. So any of our team members. But I would say two-step closing is a big thing that if you learn how to do it and you do it properly, it will change your career and how you're going to work with different individuals.
Yeah. And so just to check my understanding, so the two-step close is really once you get an offer for a candidate, rather than just excitedly pick up the phone and relay that offer, you have a call first to really double check that if that offer comes in as you think it's going to, even though it has, they're going to accept it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you already got the offer from Southwest Airlines as an example, candidates looking to get 85 an hour, you want to pre-close. Hey, I have a feedback call with the manager in about an hour here. Just wanted to confirm these are the things you're looking for. If we got you the offer at $85 an hour, this is something that you're going to accept and move forward with. Silent close. Wait, you want to wait for a second, let them answer. If you feel any hesitancy there, be like, hey, Lizzie, it seemed like you were a bit hesitant. I just wanted to confirm, were these all the things that you were looking for or am I missing something, right? They might be like, hey, no, I have another thing that I'm in process with now. I really need 90 to move forward, right? Then you got to go scale back, ask more important questions and then find out what that is. But if you do more of an assumptive close, which is not the right way to do it, you're like, hey, Lizzie, congrats. I got you an offer, $85 an hour, Southwest Airlines. Then you have all of the control. I lost it. And you're like, hey, Andy, I don't want 85 anymore. I want 95 to move forward. Then, you know, the ball's in your court. I lost all control of the process. And now I got to try to scramble to see what I can get you. You always do the two-step close, maintain control, find out what they're looking for. You have the offer in hand, but you just want to confirm that they're going to accept it. And then you kind of mash the two together.
Fantastic. Yeah, I like it. So, yeah, what's been, I'm sure there's a lot to choose from, but what would you say has been your proudest moment so far?
My proudest moment, I would say kind of the career journey. It's taken me to a great place, and one of my proudest moments from, you know, becoming a top biller and everything was being able to support and pay for a lot of my sister's wedding. I think that was a huge accomplishment for me when I joined and joined a career in sales. It's just like, hey, you can have an opportunity to earn a lot of money. We always talked about uncapped commission, but once you start getting to those levels, it becomes life-changing, right? And, you know, coming from a single parent household, it was just me and my sister. My sister took care of me my whole life. So being able to use the money that I helped make in recruitment to help pay for a lot of her wedding was a big accomplishment, something that I was proud of throughout kind of the years.
Oh my gosh, that is lovely. I didn't know that. That's a really lovely story. So that was one of your goals from your success that you were able to reach. Are there any other kind of life goals that you've reached as a result?
Life goals. I would say another proud moment, and then I'll go back to that. It's just like whenever I see people on my team get promoted, or once they hit like their biggest commission check or something, you know, they first hit their six figures, those are also like the proudest moments that I have. When you see people that are first starting off, or that their goal is like, hey, I really want to make six figures, and then they hit that, or they get their next promotion and they get their first 10K commission checks, a lot of those things I would say are you know, some of the proudest moments that I've had. And then I guess just for my own self, I made it to a high point in my last career, or not my last career, but back over at the last company. I want to continue doing so over here. Danny always talks about becoming number one in the market, becoming the verb and what we do. I always strive for that, right? So I look at all the top billers in the organization. I'm like, hey, these folks are doing phenomenal. I want to get to that point. I want to surpass them. I want to make sure we have friendly competitions. So that's something that's always motivated me. When I see number one, two, three, say I'm number eight, I'm like, how do I take over number seven? How do I take over number six? How do I get to becoming the top biller? So those are things that kind of keep me going.
So it's important to you to be the number one, or are you happy to be just in the top of the league tables?
I would say I would always strive to be number one. It's great to be in the top tier table, but, you know, there's only one Michael Jordan, but it's saying like, hey, how come somebody can't be better than that individual? I feel if you have that mindset, you'll always try to strive for number one and you'll reach as far as you can. So that's always my mindset.
Yeah. And I love what you said about, you know, when you do recognize other successful people around you, you're still looking at, even though you're successful yourself, you're still looking at what can I learn from them? What could I perhaps bring into my approach? That's great. Because I think I've seen a lot of people over, because I've been in staffing like 22 years. I think that some people look to those kind of figures, you know, like yourself, a Justin Wing, a Mike Gilday, and perhaps think, oh, I can't ever get there, you know, because they've got some kind of secret sauce, or, you know, there's some dark arts going on. But actually, you can, you know, you just need to take the approach you're taking, which is to keep developing yourself and looking at ways to enhance your performance.
Yeah, I would say that's also a great kind of piece of advice, is just like speaking to top billers, right? I've spoken with Mike Gilday before, Justin Winger, James Casey, Ryan Zolik, a lot of the top folks in the organization, and just finding out what is it that they do that is really successful and how can you kind of learn from them? One thing that I try to do in my last company as well is like, I take all of these pieces of advice from a lot of the top billers, I incorporate it to myself, and then I find out how to tweak it and kind of make it my own, right? It's like assembling the perfect like body person or something. You like, I'll take the arm of this person, the head, the shoulders, right? And then you form it into like who you are, but you make it into your own, right? Something that you feel confident on moving forward.
Another great bit of advice, make it your own, you know? And I think that's why, you know, within Laurie and across Impellum, we're not the type of organization to work with scripts, because it can be useful to look at a script, but you need to get it in your own words. Otherwise it's not going to come across as you know, natural, genuine. You're not going to feel as confident. So tailoring it for you. Is there any person, or has anything happened in your career that's really surprised you?
Surprised me. I would say the only surprise I would say maybe is just my two mentors and leaders, Danny and Chris. I would say more than surprised. They've always impressed me throughout a lot of my career. They've taught me a lot of the things that I know. So I'm constantly like watching what they do and striving to be, you know, better. So having really good mentors, I think, is very important, right? They continue to impress me. They always are reaching for number one as well. They don't take anything less. So I feel like if you have great leaders like that, you're following. And then now new folks in the business, right? Matt Dunham, Ryan McMahon, a lot of these folks, if you continue to work with them and learn from them, you'll continue to be surprised and want to get better. So,
excellent. So those are some of the people that you kind of look up to in the organization and have in the past. Is there anyone in the public eye, like let's say a famous person, who you really look up to?
I would say Stephen Curry. He's a basketball player on the Warriors. The reason I really like him is he's not the tallest guy. He's actually kind of a little bit shorter than most of the NBA players and a little bit smaller build. But he's changed the game of basketball because he really perfected his craft, works extremely hard, but also became a specialist in what he does in a way. So he's the best three-point shooter ever in the history of basketball. Similar to like how we're specialists in mobile, we're specialists in Salesforce, right? You can become perfect at what you do. But I feel for him is, you know, he's a very humble individual. He works extremely hard. He shows that if you can put in the hard work, you can reach those type of goals. So I've always admired him. I feel like he works extremely hard, he's extremely talented, but he did all of the work it took to get there. It didn't happen overnight.
So, wow, I'm gonna look this guy up. I haven't heard of him, I have to confess, but then I don't know a lot about basketball, but I love the fact that he has figured out how to be successful, even though it sounds like physically he's a little bit more limited than your typical pro basketball player. And as a short person, I'm not saying he's short, I'm sure he isn't, but I'm always like, oh, that's heightist, you know. I'm still scarred from PE lessons back at high school, but I'll look him up. Let me see. I suppose staying on the subject of like famous people in the public eye, you mentioned podcasts before, but are there any books or movies that you'd recommend to this audience and why?
Yeah, I have a few books that I really enjoy. So Radical Candor would be one. Really loved that one for both managing upwards and downwards and, you know, being able to give feedback. So that the Ideal Team Player is a really good one for teamwork. They really talk about humble, hungry, and smart there, which a lot of VPs and presidents, a lot of top leaders talk about a lot. So it's easy, really easy to kind of reference the Ideal Team Player for that. For a third one, Never Split the Difference. I know this is Shane's favorite book. We did a book club on it. I absolutely love this one. And they talk about negotiating and just, you know, finding the proper ways to do it. I really love that book. Atomic Habits, one that we're reading right now, about constantly getting better every day, 1% better. Excuse me. And then the last I would say is the Challenger Sale. It's also just a kind of a different approach to selling and the way that you're going after different things. So I would say those are my top five that I really liked.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so pleased you mentioned Challenger because, you know, I'm a big fan. And I think, you know, you are a natural challenger. If we go back to the beginning of the conversation, you were talking about that consultative sell, being able to provide your clients with insights. And it relates to withdrawals and deposits, I think, because what salespeople have typically done over the years is just ask loads of questions. Mm-hmm. So you're asking, like you were saying, you know, you're asking for something all the time. But if you're actually partnering by also providing insights that relate to your specialist area, that's what people want. So, and humble, hungry and smart. So with that, are they talking just for sales or is that like across any profession?
Any profession, yeah. So when they were interviewing folks for their team, those are the three kind of characteristics that we're looking for. So people that are humble, right? You know, they're not going to cause too many problems. They're a team player with folks that you can work with. They're hungry, right? And this ties in really well to sales, right? Because you go into a sales job because you're very hungry, you're motivated, you want to make a good career for yourself. And then third is smart. It doesn't have to be book smart per se. That's not how the book comes across, but more so just smart with the individual that you're working with, having emotional intelligence, understanding the folks that you're kind of collaborating with. So being humble, hungry, and smart as you go after any position, kind of just using those three things. And we even think about that as we interview folks across for our team. Like, do they hit those things on kind of what we're looking for?
I love it. Yeah, it just makes a lot of sense again. And that's sticky, humble, hungry, smart.
Yeah.
And there's so many different ways of being smart, as you say. I mean, book smart, street smart, commercially smart, and emotionally.
Absolutely.
Of course, these days we expect, especially our leaders, to be all of these things. and we've got some great examples, you know, including yourself. What about movies? When you were talking before about basketball and someone who's changing the game, I thought about Moneyball. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, I really like that one. Moneyball was good.
And it really makes me think, actually, I'm just thinking this right now, but whenever I speak to you about what makes you successful, because we've had a few conversations, you are very clear about what you need to do, what the high value activities are and why. And I think that comes across in that movie, because they don't necessarily, and I'm not saying this is your, you've got a great team, but that team aren't set up for success naturally, are they? So they have to come up with more of a formula to make the best of what they've got.
Yeah.
So I really like that one.
Absolutely. I like that one a lot. This one, I'm sure everybody has watched in the sales world, but Wolf of Wall Street is good.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, how they talk about the ways that you're supposed to pitch and how you can kind of learn from that. And then I always love movies that kind of build up, or even a TV series on Netflix. Is it the one with Michael Jordan? That one is a really great one to continue to get motivated. It just talks about his career journey and just like becoming the best basketball player, how he always made sure everybody on his team was giving 150% and wouldn't accept anything less. So just like him being a phenomenal leader. So when I'm looking for motivation and stuff, I would rewatch that.
Yeah. Wolf of Wall Street is one of my go-tos. Like, it is a movie that I can watch time and time again. And it's not because, you know, I want to emulate that particular sales approach, but within it, there's some things that definitely work. I mean, just speaking with the confidence that the way they train their salespeople to have that confidence and their ability to close. Plus, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is in it, so it's a good movie. Okay, so we're wrapping up, Andy, but is there anything that I haven't asked you, but you wish I had asked, or anything that you'd want to add, any last bits of advice, etc.?
Yeah, I would say maybe a question would just like, why do I stick around in sales, or why should people stick around in sales? And for me, I read this book called The Accidental Salesperson, and the one person in the book answered it best. And they're like, why do you work in sales, or why do you stick around in it? It's like, because that's where the money is at, was his answer. And I thought that was incredible, for one. But I think for this job, it's amazing because you can make the best of it in the best way possible, right? We work in a sales job where if you book a lot of meetings, if you get recs on the board, if you get some interviews locked in, and then you get some GP on, if you do that well and you build good relationships, you have empathy, and you understand the long-term game, you can become really, really successful in this career. And I feel like it's not a job where it's entirely too stressful. I feel like if I was a doctor and I had somebody's life in my hands, or like a lawyer and I lost a huge case, it could really kind of affect me. But for this one, our job is to book meetings, get recs on the board, you know, get interviews locked in, and then negotiate offers. You do that well, you master your craft at that, you can become excellent at this job, and you can have a lot of fun doing it. So I would say I love sales for those reasons, where it can be stressful sometimes. The market's a little bit shit right now. We need to find out the ways to adapt. But if you go in with that mindset, like, hey, this job is great. Like, you can become really good at this by perfecting your craft and getting a little bit better, 1% better every day. So that's what keeps me around. And just the fact that you can make a lot of money in this job, right? It's a position, I think this is the first thing I said in my interview with Chris when I first started, is like, when you join a career in sales, yes, there's uncapped commission, but you can make a lot by working really, really hard. Sometimes there's jobs where you make, or you just set on a set salary, or there's not many opportunities for a variable income. It's not the case for that in sales. So if you put in a lot of the work and you work smart, it can kind of, you'll reap the benefits down the line. So that's the reason I love it.
Yeah, that's such a great answer. I love the comparison with, you know, doctor, lawyer, those kind of professions, because can you imagine the impact if something goes wrong is far more stressful.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we don't have stress, of course, but
yeah,
the impact is not ever going to be that. And, you know, the result of what we're doing in sales, in staffing, which is why I love it, is only positive, because we're finding people positions. We're helping people with their career. And that's nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, something to be proud of. So yeah, thank you for that. Gosh, we've covered a lot. So we've got your top tips, the books you read, the podcasts you listen to, movies, the fact that you did that wonderful thing paying in part for your sister's wedding, so families come into it. And you've name dropped, well, between us, we've name dropped quite a lot of other people across Lorien and beyond. So other great role models like yourself that people could reach out to for advice, potentially mentoring. I think it's been great, Andy. And I really appreciate you taking this time. I know you're in demand. And I can't wait to hear how your meetings go.
Absolutely. Thank you for putting together, Lizzie. I appreciate it.
Of course. Take care then.
Thanks for listening, and watch out for the next episode of Diary of a Serial Biller.